We're hearing the experiences of a congregation of Catholic nuns who have been on the Texas border assisting asylum seekers at a respite center in McAllen. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. More than 103,000 migrants crossed the southwestern border in March without authorization. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, is currently housing more than 50,000 migrants. It's the highest number on record. And at this rate, more than a million people will have tried to cross the border within a year. Have you recently visited the southern border? What did you observe? What did you take away from the strained immigration system? We're at 800-642-1234. Sister Claire Lawler and Sister Julie Krall are from the Congregation of Sisters of St. Agnes in Fond du Lac, and they were recently at the southern border with Mexico to volunteer at a humanitarian center for immigrants. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So you both visited the Texas border at the end of January. You're headed back in a couple weeks, and you went there for 2 weeks. Julie, let's start with you. Can you tell us what kind of volunteer work you were doing?
That everyone always wants to know, what did you do? What did you do? When we went for the orientation, the first thing that they told us was, make sure you take care of yourself. We don't have time. So if you need to leave, leave. If you need to eat, go eat. So that said, the second thing they said to do was, if you see something that needs to be done and you think you can do it, don't ask. Do it. So representative of the, the sister called it the holy chaos, okay, that was going on. So what did we do? A lot of stuff, and it was called pay attention, get there. We sorted clothes. We fixed food. We distributed water. We, enjoyed and talked with, to the best of our ability, the refugees coming in. But I think the key piece, that really struck us. We were part of the welcoming committee. The general procedure was when the buses drive up, you drop what you're doing, you go out, and you welcome the people getting off the bus. And they had this little standard thing that they did. As soon as the immigrants walked into the building, everyone clapped. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about what did you do, we worked really hard, but we also welcomed a lot.
Sister Claire, how many immigrants were you seeing each day?
At the time we were there, probably about 500. Currently, I think that is now 1,000 per day. And at the respite mm-hmm. center. And so the buses would bring them in. They would start in the early afternoon, and then they would bring them in all afternoon. Now I think it's going round the clock pretty much. And so we would go out there and welcome them, and many of you could see the story sort of written on their face. Many of them would get down on their knees and start praying. People would be crying out of relief of being there, and we just learned how to welcome them. We gave them hugs. We said, welcome to the United States of America, bienvenidos. It was an amazing scene to see them finally come from this very long traveling that they had done to get to the border and finally being in the United States. So I wish we could film them.
At the respite center, they're getting the food and the clothing
right.
and some support. But how long are they there? And then what happens?
Well, they're usually there for about 24 hours, sometimes up to 48. They get a new set of clothes. They get some food. They get some sleep. And then they are connected with their sponsors, who are all over the United States. They get an envelope with papers and a sign on the front that says, I don't speak English. Can you help me get to this bus or something like that? And then they are off to all over the United States via Greyhound or another bus line.
Julie, did you have any sense of which countries they are coming from, where you're seeing the most mm-hmm. asylum seekers?
Surprisingly, everyone thinks Mexico. No, there were some people from there, but the majority were coming from Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala. We saw a couple of people from Nicaragua. Most of the time, believe it or not, there is enough distinguishing characteristics that we could tell where they were coming from. and lots and lots and lots. So, yes, lots of countries.
You say that they go on a bus and they are sponsors all over the country. Who are these sponsors?
Interesting that you should ask, because that was an area that, first of all, we didn't interface with sponsors, but they could not, because they were asylum seekers who were legal. They had come in. They had to have sponsors. These were, I would say, families, people that could take them in and help them find jobs, help them, you know, acclimate to being in America, and a probably primary piece, get them to their court sessions so that they could begin the citizen process. I do think there may have been some organizations that were considered sponsors, but individuals, families.
We're talking with Claire Lawler and Julie Krall. They're from the Congregation of Sisters of St. Agnes in Fond du Lac, and they recently visited the Texas border to provide humanitarian aid for immigrants. They'll be going back in a couple weeks. You can join in this conversation at 800-642-1234. Did you or a family member enter this country as an asylum seeker? What did your family hope to find by coming to this country? What was this process like? What questions do you have about volunteers and their role in the country? Immigration process. Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Sister Carol, can you tell me what you could take away from these immigrant stories and what they were fleeing from? Did you have any sense of their trauma?
They were fleeing from violence, and they were most worried about their children and the violence that was going on in their own countries. And so they were seeking asylum in order to get away from that as an everyday experience. They were very careful and protective of their children. And the children looked fairly physically okay. It was the parents that I think probably gave food on the way to the children rather than to themselves. So there was a difference in how parents looked versus children looked. All were, you know, looking forward to a new life in a different country that didn't experience that kind of violence.
Julie, were there any characteristics to you that stood out to you about these families coming over?
They really did look emaciated and tired when they arrived. I think one of our favorite realizations, remember, you're supposed to do whatever you can do when you see something that needs to be done. We were standing outside noticing that there were probably 30, 40 children in what they had set up as a play area with toys. Okay. There were no adults. Nobody was supervising. So, you know, the old principal in me is like, I can supervise these kids. I'm watching them. Unlike some of my experience, they didn't need supervision. They were so well behaved. They so took care of each other. Oh. They shared the toys. You'd see a child playing with one for a while. Another little kid would look longingly, and he would give him the toy. So, you know, we credit the parents for raising such good children. They just, if you ask them to do something, they were aware, and they were sweet, okay? Mm. And that was, for me, like I said, as a former principal, it's like, oh my gosh, they're doing great out here.
We're talking about the experiences at the border in McAllen, Texas, as a congregation of nuns from Fond du Lac spent time helping asylum seekers at a humanitarian respite center. Claire Lawler and Julie Krall are from the Congregation of Sisters of St. Agnes. You can join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. A congregation of nuns from Fond du Lac has returned from the southern border after helping asylum seekers at a Catholic Charities humanitarian center in McAllen. We're hearing about it on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The White House spent Congress a $4.5 billion emergency spending request this week, citing an unfolding humanitarian and security crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border as record numbers of Central American families and children seek entrance to the U.S. We're hearing about one respite center run by Catholic Charities where hundreds of migrants, mostly from Central America, are dropped off each day. And the nuns blogged about their time at the border, including this detail. Each family carries a bag of clothing, snacks, a small pillow, and a small blanket. Each child receives a toy or stuffed animal to which they cling to as they depart. Sisters Claire Lawler and Julie Krall are from the Congregation of Sisters of St. Agnes, and they spent 2 weeks at this center, and they're headed back in a couple weeks. Let's go to the phones now with Lucy joining us from Madison. Hi, Lucy.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead, Lucy. Yeah.
I wanted to tell you I went down to El Paso last October for a Spanish immersion class, and I was unfortunately only able to stay a couple of weeks, so I didn't get around to, and I got sick also, didn't get around to going to Annunciation House there. But I had the experience of going across the border because our class does, they do that with the class. We went across one time to go eat in a restaurant and see the market and the stores and stuff and just experience speaking in Spanish. And when we came back, there were six of us in the class that went along with our teacher. And when we came back, the Border Patrol was mean to us, really. There was this young man that... he was very young. He looked old enough to be a high school kid to me, and I'm 70, and I'm old enough to be his grandmother, and he was extremely rude to me, and he talks like I shouldn't be going down there and stuff like that, and it just, I just felt as though somehow they're training the Border Patrol people to be, not to be polite and to give people a hard time for going over the border.
Lucy, thank you for the call. And it sounds like, you know, that is their first engagement in the U.S. as asylum seekers is that Border Patrol, Julie.
You know, we didn't see a lot of violence, but we were not at the border watching them try to cross. The people that we saw had been, you know, they'd made it through the asylum seeking process, and it was actually the Border Patrol that bused them to us. And so we saw, we were grateful. They let us know ahead of time that a bus was coming. And, they were Border Patrol, but we did not see that. Now, did we hear stories? Yes. You could tell they came in. Imagine, they had no shoelaces. Those were taken from them. They had no belts. Again, left at the border. They were given ankle bracelets. Not given. They were placed on their ankles. These were huge things, uncomfortable. And, well, if you're wearing an ankle bracelet like that, you can imagine the feelings that they had because it immediately put them into, what are you, a criminal? Are you a drug person? What are you? That was tough. But we heard stories, but we did not see it where we were.
Let's go back to the phones with Kurt joining us from Wind Point. Hi, Kurt.
Good morning. And thank you for having this topic on.
Sure. What's on your mind?
My wife and I have hosted foreign exchange students over the years. We are interested in hosting a family coming across the border. I loved hearing about the families and individuals getting placed on Greyhound buses and being relocated to families who are sponsoring them. How can we become one of those families?
Kurt, thanks for the call. Would either of you like to field that?
Yay, Julie? Please. They are needed. Okay. Think about it. Your experience already tells us you could probably do this. You need to contact the U.S. Immigration and something or other, NCIS, okay? Mm-hmm. If you check with them, you would be able to go through the sponsoring system and figure out what do you have to do. Can you do it? Our usual response is don't think too hard about it. You can, okay? It will not be easy, but you can do this.
You also visited a migrating butterfly sanctuary, and it had a real effect on you. Can you tell us about that?
Yes.
Sister Claire, you were there as well.
Yes, I was. Wonderful place, truly a cultural marker. Full of butterflies and such. And it is right on the border. And as we were there, they were building more border fence. And you could hear in the background, you could hear the machinery that was taking down the hills and flattening it out, making kind of berms on which they were going to put the fence. And so you could see the process happening right in front of you. And there are several places that are historic that are in jeopardy of not being able to maintain themselves because they're being split in half by the border fence, which is, you know.
It really was striking to stand mm-hmm. in that beautiful sanctuary that's mm-hmm. full of trees. down there, they call it a thorn forest, which matches the kind of trees they have. But to stand there and hear the bulldozers and know that that farmland is being leveled, their watershed area is being, you know, touched. And so it was tough to see it. It will go if the board goes up. It is a sanctuary for migrating butterflies and birds.
Well, let's turn our attention to Catholic Charities Humanitarian Respite Center. Certainly, nuns are playing a large role in keeping the effort going. Are there lots of other volunteers who come from all over?
Yes, there are. In fact, there are volunteers that come for 6 months at a time. Some of them are retired doctors and retired educators, people who are very happy to be able to do probably what they've wanted to do all of their lives. So that it mainly runs on volunteers, and some of them are there year-round and some 6 months, and others, you know, several weeks like we have been.
We enjoyed seeing the youth that would come. It was learning service projects for several colleges and high schools. And so you saw a lot of people that came once for a couple of hours, and we did not see them again. So they need volunteers. Anyone that can come and participate, there's something for you to do. And you don't need to speak the language. You just need to be there.
I would assume with the influx of asylum seekers being dropped off at the respite center, therefore you would need more volunteers to help.
We talked to one of our friends that we worked with who is still down there. They said, if you could come, it would be amazing. We're getting tired. We're overwhelmed. We're working too many hours. We need volunteers that can come in and take over and not panic in how awful it is right now, how confusing and how hard.
Sister Claire, what did you learn that people here in Wisconsin maybe don't realize or understand that they could take with them today, now?
As I looked at all of the immigrants coming in, all I could think of most of the time was, this is the future of the United States of America. And these people are worth our ability to donate to them, to work with them, to bring them in as new citizens of the United States, since they're coming here as that. The children, I have to say, the children were amazing. And I'm a former educator and a psychologist, and I just looked at those people, and all I could do was cry, because they are so, they will make such wonderful citizens in this country that we need to be very open to that process and to look at them as a great gift.
Sister Julie, we only have a minute left, but I want you to reflect on what you will be thinking as you go back, and maybe your mindset as you go back, and what you would hope to accomplish as you help the effort.
You know, advocacy, I think, is big. When we get back here, we need to be contacting senators, representatives. We need to be actively figuring out how can we support them, how can we help people give donations, how can we encourage people to get actively involved. It's like, go ahead. If you've got a space, go. It is fascinating. There is more down there than just helping the people. It is going down and visiting the border. It is a cultural center that we're not familiar with. That would be just amazing. So I'm coming back thinking about what can we do from here. We can't let it sit.
Thank you both so much. Oh, Sister Claire, one last thought.
Yes, and if you're going to send down some wonderful clothing or anything like that to the center, you can get that address off of the Rio Grande Catholic Charities Center. Just remember, these people are really tiny, so everything needs to be really small.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Claire Lawler, Julie Krall, they are from the Congregation of Sisters of St. Agnes in Fond du Lac, and they recently visited McAllen, Texas, to provide humanitarian aid for migrants who are crossing the border, and they will be going back very soon. Coming up, the federal government is urging private companies to build immigrant detention centers, but when one company tried opening two facilities in northwest Wisconsin, it faced fierce opposition. We'll talk with an investigative reporter about that. It's after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about scrap plans for an immigration detention facility in northwest Wisconsin. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A Virginia-based company wanted to build a 500-bed detention center in St. Croix County that would generate hundreds of jobs and add millions of dollars to the tax rolls, but the company has abandoned its plans to build in New Richmond. What questions do you have about immigration detention centers and how these facilities operate? Are you a supporter or an opponent of building them in Wisconsin? And what concerns would you have about building an immigration detention center in your community? We're at 800-642-1234. Maria Perez is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where she covers immigration and social services. She joins us from our studios in Milwaukee. Maria, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
So help us understand, what is the purpose of an immigration detention center? What does it do?
An immigration detention center is the place where that the government uses to hold immigrants that are usually either waiting for their asylum case proceedings or for their deportation proceedings. You need to follow a process, in most cases, to deport an immigrant who it may be deportable. And the case, unless the immigrant signs a voluntary departure, has to be heard by a judge. During that time, in many cases, immigrants are held in detention centers.
And what are these facilities? What do they look like? Are they more like a prison setting?
It depends. In some cases, it's county jails. So, like, you may have a space or that is different from the other or not at all in county jails. And in some other cases, you can have private detention centers that are, yes, kind of like similar to a prison setting.
Are they only for the adults, or where do the kids go, or what about entire families?
They are usually different. You have detention centers that are more specialized in detaining families. The ones that they use to hold minors are supposed to be more shelter-like, although like we have also seen the images of these huge, massive detention centers where they are held on even tent camps. In general, for juveniles, they're supposed to be a little bit less, have a feeling of a prison. The centers that were planned to be built in Wisconsin, those were only for adults.
For adults, and these were 500-bed facility projects that are not going to happen. But before we get to that, federal officials have really been encouraging companies, private companies, to build more of these. What is the rush to build these facilities?
Well, we don't really know because ICE didn't tell us. But what we know here is that in 2017, there was a request for information that asked from private companies to any ideas or any plans to build detention centers near Chicago, near Detroit, and near St. Paul, Minneapolis area, mm-hmm. which is the area that this facility in western Wisconsin, if it had been green-lighted, would serve. And we know at the same time, we are seeing a rise in the numbers of immigrants detained. In the last years, in 2016, the last year, fiscal year 2016, it was about 34,000 plus detainees. As of March of this year, for fiscal year 2019, it's the average has been more than 45,000 detainees.
Seeing numbers around 50,000, new record numbers.
Yeah.
Talking with Maria Perez, an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where she covers immigration and social services. And she's been writing about a company's failed efforts to build immigration detention centers in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about immigration detention centers and how these facilities operate? Are you a supporter or an opponent of building them in your community? What concerns do you have? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Maria, you wrote about this Virginia-based company and its attempt to build two centers in Wisconsin, one in New Richmond, the other in Baldwin. The company is called Immigration Centers of America. What can you tell us about this company?
Well, this company actually was just one detention center, but they tried in both communities. But this company is a Virginia-based company. By now, they only have one detention center in Farmville, Virginia. Their message is that they treat immigrants more humanely than county jails can, but they have had some problems in their past. There was a detainee who died in, I believe, 2011, and they were found to not have been complying with all the policies that they had to comply. They had some inspection failures early in 2011. I think they started in 2010. The company said that they disagreed with many of them, and they corrected the ones that were accurate. It's a very secretive company. They fought in federal court to keep under seal the ownership interest. We know the registered agent is Russell Harper, but as of 2015, they said they had eight owners, but we don't know who the others are.
So you really don't know who's running the company. Why would this company want to build centers in Wisconsin? We're more than 1,000 miles from the southern border.
Well, ICE put out a request for proposals to build centers in 100 mile radius of the area of St. Paul, Minnesota. And as well as I said before, Chicago and Detroit, since that they are interested in having new detention centers in the Midwest, all over the Midwest. And this company was just responding to that request for proposals, trying to secure a location to establish that they could build a detention center in case the government could green light the project, the federal government.
And this is a real rural area. We hear about how rural parts of Wisconsin are struggling to find criminal defense attorneys all the time. And if immigration detention centers are built in rural Wisconsin, are there enough immigration attorneys to handle these cases?
It's always been very tough for immigrants who get detained to find attorneys because as you know, they are not entitled, even if they are low income, and in a criminal case, they would be entitled to a criminal defense attorney. In an immigration case, they are not. Usually, if they are detained, they cannot work, which means that they cannot raise the funds to pay for an immigration attorney. It's been also in other cases, like detention centers that have been built in Florida, that they are usually built away from major centers of population.
Major city center, away from city centers? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I'm assuming part of it is because there is less opposition to build detention centers away from cities. In cities, you usually have more like immigration advocacy organizers who are more present, closer. I guess it draws more the support of small communities who may see these centers as a job creation opportunity.
Is there an economic or workforce advantage to building them in a rural area of the state?
That's unclear for the community's perspective. These corporations are promising jobs, full-time jobs with great salaries. Immigration advocates say that those salaries turn out to not be that great in the end, and that in the end, it depends on the kind of growth you are looking to. If you are, for example, like New Richmond, they wanted to have more of a mixed-use development with commercial and retail. Like a prison is not, a detention center is probably not the best idea, as the staff pointed.
So, Maria, in the case of Immigration Centers of America, would they foot the bill on paying to build this facility and creating it from the ground up? I mean, where does the money come from?
The money comes from the federal government. Okay. Once the project is selected and the contract is awarded, the federal government would pay the company to build and run the center.
And so the community where it's located has very low risk involved in terms of the money that the community has to put up.
Yeah, the community would only have to put, like, if there is any need for new infrastructure, like water, sewage, new roads for increased traffic. That's the kind of thing that the community would have to pay for.
We're talking about a private prison company that has pulled back on plans to build an immigrant detention center in St. Croix County after a couple attempts fell through. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's investigative reporter Maria Perez recently wrote about the company's failed efforts to build detention centers in Wisconsin. You can join in with your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Are you an immigrant or an attorney or work in law enforcement? Where do you think immigrants should be held, if they should be held at all, while they seek documented residency? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up this conversation in just a minute. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about a failed attempt to build immigrant detention centers in northwest Wisconsin. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Federal government is trying to open immigration detention centers all over the country as an influx of people from Central America seek asylum, with an increase in arrests as well of immigrants living in the U.S. And the 2019 spending bill passed by Congress in February instructed ICE, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to reduce its detainee population from about 50,000 to 40,000 by September. So what questions do you have about immigration detention centers? What do you think of President Trump's response to asylum seekers and other immigrants at the country's border with Mexico? What should elected lawmakers know? 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Maria Perez is with us. She's an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where she covers immigration and social services. Let's go to the phones now with John joining us from Somerset. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
Good. Yes, I live close to that area where they want to put the immigration thing in, and I really think they got to have a place somewhere, and it's going to provide jobs for people, and I think they got to vet some of these people, because we don't know if they're coming in from the Middle East, even though they're coming up from the South, you know. If they're infiltrated.
So, John, you would be supportive of a detention center opening in your community?
Yes, we do have one, I think, a correctional one up by New Richmond. And, yeah, I think it would help the community, and they would benefit from for jobs and.
John, thanks for the call. And Maria, in New Richmond, which is about 50 miles northwest of Eau Claire, you reported there being pretty fierce public outcry before this proposed detention center was abandoned and the plans were scrapped. Why were people upset?
Well, you had people being upset for different reasons. There were the people who opposed immigrant detention and think that you should not detain immigrants and that you should not detain asylum seekers. And then you had other people who were opposed for more for community or local reasons. There were people who were afraid that the property values would go down. You had people who thought it was a waste of taxpayers' money because that was needed for different things. And then you had people who said, who were afraid, kind of. They didn't want the government sending immigrants to their backyard, and they didn't, and they thought that they should even be a house or jailed closer to the border, or that they should be sent back without delay. So you had all types of reasons.
Let's take another call now. Let's go to Michelle, who is traveling through Milwaukee. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Good. I have to say that I'm the most conservative person you know, but I'm like, are you kidding me to put people in immigration holds and centers? I actually have a son-in-law that came over illegally from Mexico, and he now has his driver's license, is about to buy his first house. We're his sponsors. They're the most decent, hardworking people you know, and to treat other human beings that have a soul just like us and put them in detention centers and stuff like that, I don't believe in any of that. And it took me to know somebody and have grandchildren by this by this person.
It took your kin. Yeah. So you have kin and you have some personal connection there. Michelle, thank you so much for your perspective. Maria, you had said from the outset that this company treats its detainees more humanely, treats its asylum seekers more humanely. Do we know anything about the practices inside a detention center that was proposed in Wisconsin?
Well, this is what the company says, that they treat detainees more humanely. We know that there's not a lot that is known. There are inspections. They are usually hard to get into the public. In the public light, and there are groups that have sued for the inspections of the detention centers. We know that there are serious violations happening in some of these detention centers. As I said, in the Virginia one that this company had in 2011, one of the inspections said that they did not meet the standards, that they didn't have enough, and that the toilets were inadequate, the showers were inadequate, that they didn't have enough professionals, enough staff to care for the healthcare needs of the inmates. Then the company said in the past five or the past 6 years they haven't had any deficiencies, but we know of violations and problems with healthcare in other detention centers.
Maria, what do we know about the plans that were supposed to happen in Baldwin? The Immigration Centers of America also dropped its plans at that facility. What do we know there?
So what we know is that, going back a little bit, Immigration Centers of America contacted New Richmond in early 2018. Then they said, or they told New Richmond staff that they were working with another community. That other community seems to be Baldwin. They met and discussed this issue behind closed doors. And ICA, the company, said that the main problem to build the facility there was that the village wouldn't be able to pay for the upgrades, for the infrastructure upgrades to serve the facility. But when I spoke with the president of the village, he said that there were many, many reasons why they decided it was not for them. Project was not for them. And then after a while is when the company contacted Neil Richmond again.
Do we have any sense of any other plans for detention centers in Wisconsin that are on the books or that you have heard of?
I haven't heard of any. The request for proposals that ICE put out, the companies have to respond to that by May 20th. So depending on whether they get any responses or any responses they like, and ICA said that they wouldn't have time to respond to that request for proposals now, to search for another site. But depending on whether ICE gets responses that they like or not, they may either extend the deadline or maybe put out another request for proposals. So that could still be in play. As of now, it's off the table, but we don't know what can happen in the future.
Well, as we start to wrap up here, Brandon from Milwaukee couldn't stay with us, but he wanted to know exactly who would be detained at a site like this in these detention centers. He asks, is it only immigrants who come into the country illegally, or are there other people at these detention facilities?
It can be immigrants who are here illegally, or it can be even legal immigrants who have committed a crime, and those two are subject to deportation if they have committed some crimes.
Well, Maria, we really appreciate your reporting. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Maria Perez is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where she covers immigration and social services, and she joined us from WPR's studio in Milwaukee. We've been talking about a private company from Virginia that failed to attempt to build a couple detention facilities in northwest Wisconsin, as we have been talking about immigration and Wisconsinites on the border during this hour of The Morning Show. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.